This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. From positive correlation across all assets in 2022 to the return of negative correlation in the first half of 2023, has that made the job of an asset allocator any easier? But what about the major headache of sticky inflation? And in light of bond volatility, should we be redefining the term safe haven? Well, luckily with me today to answer these questions and more is Chris Tashmacher, one of LGIM's senior fund managers and who sits on the asset allocation team. Chris, good to see you. Welcome to LGIM Talks.
Hello, and thank you for having me back on the pod.
No, great to see you again. So should we talk correlation? Because obviously as an asset allocator, Chris, that is key for portfolio positioning, isn't it? I mean, the first 6 months of 2023 have seen a welcome return to negative correlation. So does that mean diversification is back, at least for the next 6 months?
Yeah, indeed, it has been a welcome return. So bonds and equities now, more often than not, are moving in opposite directions again. And in 2022, that certainly wasn't the case. This seems to be caused by a few things. The most important one is definitely the kind of slowing inflation picture and investors' perception that at least some central banks might be at least near the end of their rate hiking cycle. But investors and economists have got a kind of notoriously bad track record of forecasting inflation. Now, whilst inflation is clearly off the peaks, we need to accept that there's still quite a lot of uncertainty around the different outcomes. So we need to kind of prepare and not predict for where inflation is going to go. So yes, it looks like correlations have turned negative, and we should maintain a level of caution around that. But I think diversification kind of runs deeper than just bonds and equities. So we aim for portfolios that are diversified across multiple asset classes, including alternatives, and diversified by regional exposure, currency exposure, et cetera. And so that concept is one that's kind of deeply embedded in our philosophies, in the way we build portfolios, and one that we shouldn't kind of throw out just after one bad year. I mean, you wouldn't throw out equities from a portfolio just after one bad year. So why would you throw out the concept of diversification?
One swallow does not a summer make, I think, is the expression. You mentioned just alternatives there, Chris. For those people who are not familiar with that term, just give us a couple of examples.
Yeah, alternatives can come in lots of forms. I think for us, what it means is things like infrastructure, property. It could include commodities. And there's a growing range of other asset classes that people would include in their different types of bonds from different areas, potentially insurance-linked bonds, and growing interest in private assets as well.
Okay, interesting. All right, so let's go back then to the traditional asset classes and bonds. And in 2021, I've been having a little scour of what you've been writing on the LGIM blog recently, and I found a blog, quite prescient actually. In 2021, you wrote, "The efficacy of bonds as a safe haven asset class in risk-off periods is now heavily compromised, in our view." So, in that context, does the ongoing volatility we're seeing in the bond market at the moment, Chris, mean that bonds are no longer safe haven assets?
Yeah, so it's a good quote, I think. I think I can be quite proud of that quote for the timing as well. But if I remember correctly, that comes from a blog that talked about how the low interest rate environment was compromising the ability for bonds to kind of provide any protection because the lack of ability for yield compression. So I guess straight off the bat, we can nullify that reason alone. Mm-hmm. We know yields are much higher than they were 2 years ago, so the ability to provide protection has improved. But you're right to note the volatility in bonds is still quite high. Whilst in fact in equities, the volatility is kind of in the doldrums, it's heading back to pre-pandemic levels for the first time in 3 years. How else can we think about the safe haven status of bonds? Well, we've already mentioned the negative correlations. I think a second thing to look at is kind of specific days or periods where there's been bigger moves and there's been news that presents itself as kind of a growth shock for economies. I think the fallout around the regional bank failures in the US is a good example of that. And we found in those days quite telling kind of behavior of bonds. And we think that's quite important for portfolio positioning. Because ultimately, many investors are going to hold bonds as kind of protection for those scenarios where growth gets hit. the failure of those regional banks posed a threat to growth. And around those days, equities did fall, and indeed bonds performed quite positively. So that shows bonds have an ability to provide crash protection. And I think that should be quite comforting for investors. So yeah, overall, these arguments push us to be more positive on bonds at the moment in our dynamic portfolios, but we're not kind of at the maximum conviction on that yet, because there is still uncertainty around inflation and how that might impact that equity bond correlation.
It just seems to me though, Chris, that with bonds, I mean, what you've got is capital loss in quite a few instances, but also you've got raging inflation. I mean, rate of inflation is, what, 8% plus, isn't it, in the UK? And then you've got bonds at the long end yielding 4-5. I mean, real terms, so you've got capital loss and you've not got a real yield either.
Yeah, well, I mean, the kind of longer dated bond yields include some expectation that that inflation will fall. So the real yields on many bond markets are actually now positive over longer periods, which is something we haven't seen for nearly a decade. And so actually you can now invest in longer dated government bonds, inflation linked bonds as well, and earn a real yield, which is attractive for those who've got kind of longer liabilities as well. I can agree at the short term, it does look like some of them have a negative kind of real return, but over longer periods, inflation is definitely expected to come down, and that gives you that longer real yield.
Okay. All right. Well, here's hoping. So apart from bond volatility, of course, what we've also seen is the S&P index, S&P 500. And I'm singling that out, obviously, because, you know, as a percentage of the MSCI global, it's what, over 60%, I think. It's been driven up by that narrow leadership, a handful of stocks. Well, I say that up until today, where we've had heavy falls. Always kiss of death me going into the pod, because you know you prepare these questions the night before and it never happens how you expect. But anyway, that aside, the S&P is up for the year despite investor pessimism. Doesn't history say, Chris, a hated rally often has momentum?
Yeah, I think the other one is that equities climb a wall of worries. And so I guess, yeah, after the banking crisis in March, the debt ceiling in the US as well, I think the latest, shall we say, kind of viral worry amongst more bearish investors is that narrow market rally with mega cap kind of tech stocks accounting for the majority of the S&P's returns this year. They've enjoyed a boom around all things related to AI, and they've also enjoyed kind of the prospects of the Fed reaching the end of its rate hiking cycle. And I think you can find data that supports either argument, that a narrow rally is both good thing for the outlook for equities or a bad thing. What I think most people would agree on is that that kind of narrowness in itself isn't sustainable or unlikely to be sustainable. So either the rest of the stock market needs to catch up, or there's some space for these leaders to kind of deflate a little and come back down to earth. Either way, I think what's relevant for investors is that this presents kind of what we call a concentration conundrum, and that really showcases the case. So seven stocks explained about 60% of 2022's decline in markets as well. Wow. And 80% of 2023's positive returns, roughly. Now, in our view, that's an avoidable concentration risk. And so our core belief, again, is to diversify away from that. And that in the long run, that kind of concentration in itself shouldn't be rewarded. And US equities as a whole is probably a good example of that. Not just these tech stocks, but the US has been kind of the best performing equity region 8 out of the last 12 years. But we shouldn't necessarily expect that to repeat. And so for us, there's a worry that investors are kind of flocking towards a potentially crowded strategy that, in fact, that kind of level of outperformance should warrant against. So, yeah, we prefer to not get into such concentrated positions and follow these kind of trends too heavily in our portfolios.
I suppose from a manager's point of view, short term, it's so difficult, isn't it, to be out of these when the momentum is going one way, it seems, at the moment. But let's just go back to inflation, because you've touched on it and you did mention that you thought, in your view, we had seen peak inflation, and that seems to be borne out by current data, doesn't it? But it's a problem that won't go away and that hasn't gone away. So for the rest of the year then, Chris, how are you calling inflation?
Like I said earlier, investors and economists, and in fact, kind of central banks too, have pretty poor track record of predicting inflation. So mark my words with a handful of salt. Because of course, we need to have a view for positioning, but really the main thing is to position for different outcomes rather than just focus on one potential outcome. Now, overall, yeah, we see inflation is coming down in most markets. I've got a fascinating chart of the month coming up on the Elgin blog and also on our LinkedIn channel shortly that'll show kind of a breakdown of inflation across different components. And it just shows how problematic the kind of service sector inflation is still proving to be and how sticky that inflation might kind of prove as well. And if that persists, yeah, we think the Federal Reserve, other central banks will feel the pressure to continue with at least some more rate hikes in the future. And then there's a few regional differences too. The inflation numbers in the UK over the last week or so clearly show there's something different going on here. But ultimately, despite our differences on this island from the rest of the world, we don't think the inflation dynamics here should be too different from Europe or the US in the kind of medium or long term. A Brexit, for example, can't explain the gap that we're seeing. So the extrapolation that we see of markets, of investors to forecast kind of inflation Armageddon in the UK, whilst the rest of the world floats neatly out of the problem, feels hard for us to believe. And in turn, that drives us to actually have a relatively bullish view on UK gilts versus other government bond markets right now. We think too much pessimism is priced into that market and that those yields should kind of do better, come down more than other markets, or indeed that other markets may have to catch up because the inflation problem is wider.
There is a lot of pessimism, isn't there, around the UK? Usually when it hits the 10 o'clock news, that's the time to act. Yeah. Right. So against that background, and you know, you've explained the trends in inflation, but what are you doing in the here and now then to hedge or protect your portfolios then?
Yeah, so we wrote a blog series about that last year. It's called Allocations for Inflation. And my colleague, actually, Aristide Guylain, just done a great review or follow-up of that to kind of see how our so-called inflation toolkit fared over the last year. And I think a lot of our responses would be the same, because we said back then that the response to inflation should be structural in portfolios rather than too tactical. And the three main strategies we kind of highlighted for dealing with inflation were to maintain a diversified bond portfolio, not to throw out the bond baby with the bathwater. The second is to use overseas currencies. And lastly, to allocate to assets with longer term inflation linkages and sensitivities, which includes some of the alternatives we mentioned earlier, like listed infrastructure, forestry potentially as well.
And just draw out your currency point there, Chris. What are you doing? How are you allocating to different currencies there?
Yeah, so I mean, the UK's inflation issue that we see now, even though in the medium term we think it should kind of align with other countries, it's not unheard of before. The UK does have somewhat of a long and glorious history of higher inflation than other areas, or sometimes slightly more persistent. And that can sometimes weaken the currency. So holding overseas currencies and a range of those, US dollars, euros, also emerging market currencies, can help kind of defend against domestic inflation problems. And again, that should be a structural thing in portfolios. Domestic inflation is really what our investors are going to care most about. And if you hold those foreign currencies, then that helps protect when our situation gets necessarily worse than others. And so, yeah, we've seen weakness in the pound in the last few years. Actually, more recently, it's been kind of more stable, but in the kind of higher inflation periods last year, we saw some weakness in the pound, dollar doing particularly well, and that kind of helped our portfolios by having those foreign currency allocations. And EM currencies as well. Emerging countries have been ahead of the inflation trends as well, and that's been a positive in some cases.
Okay, that's interesting. Thanks for clarifying that. Now, the house view, as listeners will know if they've listened to previous podcasts, is that we are bearish, that we are going into recession in the second half of the year. But that said, and again, you've touched on it, Chris, bonds aside, a lot of asset classes aren't really priced for a recession, partly, and again, you've alluded to this with strong service inflation, partly because of strong wage growth supporting the consumer. So is there any reason in your view to suppose that that trend is going to reverse?
Yes, wage growth has been supporting the consumer to some degree, and it is still kind of high now. But for a lot of the last year, actually, real wage growth has still been negative. So the level of wages rising has been below the headline level of inflation. And now consumers might feel that their pay has been going up nominally, but that's not been the case in real terms. And the other real kind of tailwind they've had has been savings from the pandemic era as well. So in many countries, kind of cash handouts, etc., helped build up big savings buffers, as well as having a lower spending in that kind of those periods. But they've been kind of spending all of that savings. So there's no more savings left to spend. And so it's possible that we see those consumption rates coming down as well. But yeah, our view on recession is kind of continuously challenged. And in fact, consensus is that has moved towards a kind of better growth outlook. So we regularly look at a number of indicators to challenge our view and see what looks like there might be a soft landing and what kind of supports that there might be a recession. So in the soft landing kind of camp, you've got things like commodities, energy, goods prices that have come down quite a lot and maybe heading back into deflationary territory. Then there's mixed data from things like housing market, which saw a lot of gains in previous years. It's given back a little bit of that, but actually looks quite stable. Now, if higher rates continue, mortgages get revalued, pushes down demand for housing, and housing markets fall, that would contribute to a recession. But right now it's looking kind of mixed or relatively stable. But then still supporting the recession views, things like those sticky wage prices and really the tight lending conditions that we see as well. Mm. So banks making it harder for corporates to get loans and therefore harder for companies to kind of grow their business as well.
So interesting to see that you're nuancing the degree of recession, I suppose, is what you're saying, isn't it? But given that you are still bearish, Chris, let's talk about cash. Crumbs, I haven't talked about cash in years, really. Does this mean, though, you're long cash then?
I mean, cash can look quite attractive to investors with interest rates so high. But yeah, not in our portfolios right now. We're taking a defensive view in portfolios, but that doesn't necessarily mean cash has increased. We're underweight some of the riskier asset classes like equities and credits, overweight government bonds like I mentioned earlier, and then also overweight other areas that give us some protection. So we prefer defensive stocks to cyclical stocks, and we're looking for the other diversifiers in our portfolios within equities as well, things like decarbonization stocks, forestry, infrastructure, things like that to help diversification and sometimes have something of a defensive tilt to them as well.
Okay, all right. So when you're not asset allocating and you're not working hard on planning your different recessionary scenarios, how do you spend time away from your Bloomberg screen?
Yeah, interesting. So,
or do you?
I do a bit, yes. Three kids certainly requires some attention as well. And I guess we've definitely welcomed the summer in our house. And I'm a keen kind of chef or cook as well. So that's meant a lot of barbecues and baking, with kind of focaccia being my current baking obsession.
That's hard to make, I've heard.
I've got a good technique down, so I think it's getting improved. But I did have at least three flops in a row. So, yeah, but I think it's getting better. And then, yeah, bowling thousands of balls to my cricket mad son as well. And when there's time as well, I've been also trying to do a little bit of help with fundraising efforts for a charity that's close to my heart as well, which is at St. George's Hospital in South London.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I was going to say, don't mention the cricket. I heard last night's score. I don't know how play hasn't started yet, I don't think. But my husband is cricket mad too. So I need to keep abreast of the score. but scores and asset allocation and all the rest of it. Chris, thanks so much for your time. I know it's busy time for you today, but thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. And thank you to all our listeners for listening. Thank you. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2023. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.